This interview with Willie Hamilton was recorded on February 7th, 2023, during the Baltimore Youth Film Arts Workshop, Inside Stories, Perspectives on Incarceration.
What specific charge did you get got you incarcerated?
Oh, I was charged with murder and robbery and hands on the fence.
Okay, so you just heard that, Mike. What would be the next question that comes up to your mind? He told you the charge. If you all were like standing on a corner having a conversation, what would your next question be after he just told you that? Because that's one main part of this class is learning how to listen too. So he just says something to you that can make you ask another five or six questions.
What kind of environment did you grow up in?
That's a good question right there. So what I normally tell people is that I grew up in an environment that was not conducive or constructive for a young child to be a productive member of society. And I'm kind of hesitant on how I word certain things because I like to protect certain people because
right.
of people's transformations from being from what they were to what they are today. But I've talked to him quite extensively about this, so I think he probably wouldn't mind without going into details and all of that. So, my father was like a person who was not a father. He was like a guy that I knew or would be with in the streets. He wasn't a nurturer. He wasn't a provider or anything like that. He was one who taught me that street life. You know, everything that I ever learned or did, we did it together without going into details about that. So
your relationship with your father basically led up to, or like basically was a foundation.
Yes.
Okay. Yes.
Mr. Hamilton.
So go ahead, Mike. Did you want to follow up on that question? You asked him something. He said yes. But remember, this is your interview now as one of the students. So
right.
Do you have another question that he could go with right now so we can keep the flow going?
Sir.
You still trying to get your questions together?
Yeah, I'm trying to get my head together.
Okay, that's no problem. We'll come back to you. What about Destiny? What's on your mind, Destiny, to ask Mr. Hamilton?
Hello, nice to meet you. My name is Destiny. My question is, how did you feel being in jail? Like, what were your emotions?
Well, when I first entered prison, I didn't really feel anything. And I think it was because I was kind of masking like a lot of the anger and frustration and fear that was pent up inside of me because of my childhood. So, I was just in rage and this rage I projected to everyone around me. You know, they considered me a menace on the streets. So I wanted to come to prison and kind of show them exactly what a menace was like. So I was always into something. I was always, I stayed on what they call lockup or confined behind the door because of my actions. So for a substantial amount of time, I was angry.
Okay, my next question is, what were your plans afterwards, being confined?
Well, like I told you, I had a lot of anger in me. And one day after being in confinement, I realized I didn't want to live like that anymore, right? So my main thing was trying to find out, okay, how can I change? Or do I have the ability to change? So I started going to therapy. And one of the things, even to this day, the therapist that helped me that day, we're still in contact 30 years later. So, you know, we have a good relationship to this day. So she helped me to pinpoint, like, my anger, why I was angry, why I was acting out, doing the things that I was doing. And once I was able to pinpoint where that anger was coming from, then it was, okay, how are we going to redirect it or learn how to deal with it? So I went through those steps and processes. And then I decided to, like, okay, I'm here. I don't know how long I'm going to be there, but how did I want to live my life from that day forward? So I started to change myself.
Okay, I'm going to jump in right here, y'all. Remember how, Mike, you weren't here. This is your first time in class tonight, but everybody else knows how past couple of weeks we focused on listening to what our guest has to say. Now, just now, Mr. Hamilton had a whole bunch of things that I want to bounce off. He said like two or three things just now to make a whole bunch of questions come up in my mind. So I'm getting ready to show you all the skill of really listening to what somebody says and really hearing what they say. You might have to take notes. That's why we encourage everybody to take notes. But Mr. Hamilton might say something you'd never expected. And you got to bounce off that and maybe go a little bit deeper into it. For instance, you talked about therapy. And you actually got therapy in prison? Because that's something you hardly hear about.
Yes.
So I want to ask you with that, should there be more therapy in prison? Will that help? Did it help you? Will it help others? Is it a system that needs to be seen more to help prisoners overcome in prison?
Well, I think it should absolutely be a part of rehabilitation. Therapy is a necessity because people who commit crimes are damaged, emotionally, mentally, so many different ways. So, it's an abnormal act to go against the norm of what society has. Well, it's an abnormal act to inflict harm on other people without any remorse or regret or anything like that. So they're broken. So I think therapy is a necessity for anyone who has done a substantial amount of time or done those type of crimes or crime, period. It's a necessity, yeah.
Have you seen guys in prison, really, who maybe therapy can't do a doggone thing for them? Are they beyond therapy? Did you witness any of that?
Well, I will say this, right? Therapy only works if you seek it, if you're looking for that change. It's not going to work for someone who doesn't want to change it, who doesn't think he has the capacity to change it. So I don't think anyone's beyond therapy, but they can be beyond thinking that it can help them. You know, that's a good answer.
Okay, fellows, here's another little nugget. It's just a reminder for some. This is the first time for Mike tonight, our newest fellow. We want to get to the who, the what, the where, the when, the why, and the how of everything we're discussing with Brother Hamilton tonight. You know, who, what, when, where, why, and how. For instance, one thing is, how much time did you actually get? Now, did you see how quick I made that question, y'all? You know, without going into a lecture, saying a whole lot, I just ask a question. How much time did you get, Willie?
Well, I received a life plus 30-year sentence.
But here you are, a free man. How did you get out?
With the grace of the Creator first. And some advocates who were, excuse my French, hell bent on getting me out.
Did you do the crime? and deserve the time, because our last guest last week got life without parole plus some more, I think, and said he never did the crime.
Yes, I did the crime. Do I think I deserve that much time? There's room for debate. I would say no. But at the same time, I also want, I don't want to say no. Because, you know, for me, if this system is designed for about rehabilitation, then there has to be a point of time when first you provide the adequate things around a person to be rehabilitated. And after that happens, there has to be some form of, okay, reacclimation into society. And the justice system doesn't have those tools in line with each other. So I would say, no, I don't think I'll be really that much time.
I have a question.
Okay, I was going to ask one of you all to come on in. Come on.
My question is, have you had a bad experience in jail dealing with the inmates or the correctional officers?
I've had many bad experiences with both. I actually kind of received more time in prison for assaulting the correctional officer. I have many bad. Like I told you before, maybe first 5 years was kind of rageful. You know, it's kind of rageful. So I had a lot of bad experiences with both.
Okay, what was your life like after prison?
At prison or after prison?
After.
Oh, well, I've been home for 8 months now. After going 30 years and 110 days. It's been great. I mean, I work for a prison advocacy organization based in PG County called Life After Release, and we help with participatory defense, guys who are incarcerated now, helping them with legal assistance if possible, getting their family members involved with the legal process, understanding their rights, do court watch. I'm a character witness for a lot of guys who are going to court now for a bill called the JRA, Juvenile Restorative Act. This is an act that helped those who were incarcerated as juveniles and did 20 years or more be able to petition to get their sentence modified. I attend those hearings and I talk about what I call survival coping skills for juveniles who enter adult facility. I've been successful in that. Maybe like 5 cases for people who had life, double life, life and no parole, and help get their sentence overturned to be released. I also work for a reentry program in Baltimore City where those guys who are being released, help them with transitional housing, helping them get reacclimated in society, job placement, mental health, getting their vital records like birth certificate, social security cards, getting signed up for medical benefits and et cetera, helping them be able to go to appointments that they have and navigate this society because, for a person, and I'm still learning myself, for a person who's done a substantial amount of time coming back into this fast paced world, it can be overwhelming.
Okay, what would you tell your younger self?
Time out. Destiny, do me a favor. What was the last thing Mr. Hamilton just said? What was his last sentence just before you started to ask your question? Did you hear what he said?
That he was in a reentry?
He was talking about some of the work there, but the very last thing he said was, being back in this free world can be, what word did he use?
Overwhelming.
Yes. So I need you to come up with a follow-up question to that. He said it, but he didn't really get deep into it. I need you to pull it out of him a little bit.
Oh, why? Why did you feel overwhelmed?
Okay, that was right to the point. So ask it one more time. Is that how you like it, Mr. Hamilton? Like, right and specific? To the point?
State of direct.
State of all direct. Right, so go ahead and shoot it out there, Destiny. Say it for me, baby.
Why were you overwhelmed?
Well, I don't know how old you are, but, you know, being incarcerated for 30 years, you're faced with a lot of technology. Like, what we're doing today, Zoom, this didn't exist when I first got incarcerated. Even cell phones were kind of non-existent. Laptops, all these channels on TV and, like, the internet and stuff like that. All these things didn't exist when I got incarcerated. So learning how to use a credit card or open up and start a bank account or so many things that I think a lot of people who haven't been incarcerated at all or been doing this forever, they take for granted these things that we have to learn. So we're kind of at a disadvantage. So even trying to process a lot of this stuff can be overwhelming. This is why I say the word.
Hey, Ed, you want to jump in? I haven't heard a lot from you tonight, but I know you usually have some good stuff. Anything you want to ask, Mr. Hamilton?
Yeah, sure. How's it going on? Or sorry, how's it going, Mr. Hamilton?
How you doing?
I'm good. How are you? So, so I was kind of thinking, was there a specific experience of when you felt overwhelmed being outside of prison? Just like a detail you could tell us?
Okay. There's been a few triggers. Some of the things that I teach now to those guys who are coming out because what I experienced is that, you know, we all, after being incarcerated for so long, we want to be around our families and those loved ones who care about us and stuff like that. But what you have come to learn is that you only know them while you're incarcerated, meaning that you only get small spurts of them, like an hour for a visit, for 30 minutes on the phone. So you really don't know them like you think or you would like to. So I came home and I went to a transitional house. This is a house that houses people who were incarcerated. And, you know, you stay there for a certain amount of time. So, you know, my family, they wanted to, like, have a big cookout and get together. Everybody come to a house and I'd be there and stuff like that. So I kind of was warned against it. So I took the advice and I didn't go. But as some time passed, there was another gathering. And I went. And being around all these people that were my family, but I didn't know, and they were all gathered together talking. And I kind of stood up at the wall and watched them like the entire time until one of my cousins was like, "You're gonna stand at that wall all day, what's going on?" And I didn't even realize I was doing it, but I was around a whole bunch of people who were my family, but I didn't know them. So I left and went to a room, a bedroom, and I just lay down and I just wasn't sleepy or nothing like that, but I just couldn't be like around all of that. So it was overwhelming for me. I had a lot of anxiety. So I called a friend of mine who's been home for a while and it was explaining to him, you know, the type of feelings that I was going through. I wanted to know, was this normal? And he assured me that it was normal and he explained to me the reason why. So I comprehended it. So I came out of the room. I talked to one of my aunts and was, and I explained to her, "Look, I'm going to be back here. I can't really process everything that's going on right now because it's so surreal, you know. Because you know the type of sentences that a lot of us had. You know, you always wanted to come home, but for most of us, we thought probably we wouldn't." So being in that moment, it was kind of so surreal and a lot of anxiety.
Yeah, thank you.
Ed, did you have something else?
Maybe just like kind of one it's kind of unrelated to this point, but I had it a little bit earlier in the meeting, but I didn't get a chance to say it. But so you talked a lot about therapy during prison.
Yes.
And being able to talk to someone and having that figure as a great benefit to you.
Yeah.
So growing up, I know that your relationship with your father was not typical and was not great for your mental health. Was there someone or something you did when you were a kid growing up that kind of gave you that comfort or that help that you needed? Or was there nothing at all?
Nothing at all. Nothing at all.
Mike, did you get yourself a good question together? You want to throw it, Mr. Hamilton?
Yeah, I wasn't actually ready. I don't know why.
You're not ready yet?
But, no, I am now, but at first I wasn't.
Oh, okay, go right
but,
ahead.
I wanted to ask about what jail did you get incarcerated in? Like, what prison did you go to? Like, just say.
I've been to numerous prisons.
Yeah, like, let's talk about some of them. Let's talk about some of them. Like, which one, which like, what was your first one you went to?
The first prison I went to was, now it's called JCI, that's a corrections. Back then it was called Maryland House of Corrections Annex. Exactly. This is my first prison I went to. This is like one of the worst prisons in the United States during that time. There were a lot of murders and a lot of assaults on officers and incarcerated people. A lot of things going on there.
So with that being said, what would you say some of your day-to-day life activities would be at jail? Like, what was some of the things you did every day?
Well,
or had to do?
It kind of changed from the beginning to when I really started to, okay, develop characteristics of who I wanted to be, what I wanted to do. But initially, it was just about surviving. Learning how to survive in that type of environment. Learning how to, become part of the environment. Meaning that, you know, there's a saying about people, institutionalization and stuff like that. And there's many forms of it, but I didn't want to be like most of the guys that were in there. Living day to day in a world like that. I didn't want to be a part of that. So I knew I wanted to be something other than a person who was locked up. So, initially my first few years was just learning how to survive and how to survive and stuff like that. But after that, in therapy and stuff, I learned how to communicate and I started to see like in prison and even like in life, but in prison, one of our greatest weaknesses is that we don't know how to communicate with each other. This is like 90% of the conflicts that go on in prison can be resolved with just clear communication. So I started to learn how to communicate and to express my thoughts, feelings. And one thing in prison, a lot of guys don't share their feelings with each other. But when you can be open enough to do this with individuals, It kind of opened them up a little bit. So I became a kind of communicator in prison. That's how I survived. I don't know
if I really apologize. I could barely hear you. I thought you were done, Willie. So please continue.
No, I just said I didn't know if I answered this question. That's all.
I mean, to an extent.
So you.
I really wanted to know more, like specifics, you know.
Okay. My daily routine. Well, I'm a religious man now, so like a lot of my time was spent on studying, like studying myself, changing, like doing the inner soul, changing of myself. Finding out my purpose. I didn't get caught up in a lot of prison politics, meaning that, you know, the stuff that goes on in prison. I wasn't caught up in it. I kind of didn't deal with. I kept my circle small. So my daily activities were really studying, trying to better myself, trying to be something different than what I was. Knowing the opposite, knowing who I was, and doing everything possible to eradicate that person and be different than it. So that was my daily activity.
Was that successful? Like, do you think in your daily life, was that successful? Like, did you have a hard go about it? Like, did people mess with you, or did they typically leave you alone?
Well,
and let you get to your studies.
I don't want to say I had a reputation, but people knew who I was. So if I may go back a little bit, so when I decided to really, really change, I was involved with some things in prison that people normally shouldn't be involved with. People shouldn't be involved with anyway. I was doing some things that I shouldn't have been doing in prison. And I woke up one day and I got to be done with this. And I'm really going on this path of really changing. So I told the guys that I was dealing with that we were part of doing something. I told them I was done. I wasn't going to be a part of it. And they didn't believe me because of the amount of money we were getting at the time. And I told them, I'm done with it. I don't want it anymore. I don't want any part of it. And I just stopped. So, you know, people who dealt with me, who really cared about me, they respected my decision. Those who were only in it for what they could get, they didn't like it. But I didn't have a problem with, I wasn't bullied. I didn't get intimidated by people or any of those type of things. So kind of like with me in prison, I said what I mean and I meant what I said, and I kind of left it as that. You know, like what I told you about communicating, it's ways that you can convey to people in prison and in the outside world, but in prison, that to convince them that they don't want to go further in their inner certain realm. So I didn't have a whole lot of problems of being like bullied or intimidated. I didn't have any being intimidated or bullied or anything like that. So, you know.
I will also like to, not to get sidetracked, but
we got
to
make this the last question, Mike.
Okay, last question. Okay. Dang, you made me forget it.
We're going to come back to you. Is there anybody in the class who didn't get a chance to ask a question? Who was up there earlier? One young lady, I can't remember who it was. Who was that? She was on the chat. Is she still with us? I think, is it Yene? How do you say it?
I don't remember it.
She may be going, hey, Luke, I'm going to throw it back to you for a minute. I don't know how we look with time. I didn't know whether you wanted to get a couple questions in.
Well, sure. I guess my main question from your last story is how comfortable you'd be sharing a little bit more details about those first 5 years, about kind of, are there any specific stories that you feel like are really representative of that time?
We'll be talking about their first 5 years. Can you be more specific? I mean,
well, I guess for a specific question, you said you were making a lot of money from this secretive kind of side hustle. What can you use money for in prison? I mean, how does that get circulated? Like, what do you do? Like, what did you do with that?
You can use money for a lot of things in life, not just prison, but in life. You know, you can help pay for your lawyer. You can buy clothes or take care of yourself, even family members if you need to. Money is money anywhere you go, not prison or otherwise, you know.
And do you I'm
not going to go more in detail than that, man. If you ask me.
No, I understand. No, some things gotta be referred to only. Yeah. And so is how is money outside of prison? I mean, are you having a hard time kind of settling out and kind of, are you working now or what's that look like?
Yeah, I told you I had two jobs. in the beginning, I said, yeah, I've been, like, for me, and a friend of mine reminded me of this because I was complaining one time that I felt like I wasn't doing enough since I've been home. And he was like, man, you don't know how good you got it because people in our situation are not fortunate enough to come home with everything I came home with. I've been fortunate, like, to have first organizations want to hire me because of them knowing what I've been doing since I've been incarcerated and continue to do since I've been home. And also, all the people I hang with or I'm around are those who were formerly incarcerated people who are now out here. They have businesses. Two of them have been exonerated, so they've got paid from exoneration. And, like, when I came home, I didn't have to worry about clothes, money. Even, I got a, some gave me a car. My mother gave me a car. So, and I'm living with my cousin right now. In a few months, I'm gonna get my own place. So I really didn't have to worry about the things that a lot of individuals coming home with doing a lot of time, like I've done, have to worry about because I have a great network of supportive people, like family members and friends. So I'm fortunate in that aspect. I don't take it for granted. And I'm not out here just blowing all my money. I'm saving. I'm very conservative with that. I'm fortunate that I'm able to work and save money.
The question I wanted to ask that I forgot was, do you feel comfortable sharing some of the details of, like, your case? Like, what happened?
I kind of don't.
You don't?
Because it's other people involved. And right. I didn't get permission for them to talk about certain things. So I can only speak on me, my experiences.
But relative to that, Willie, let me ask you this. Does the events of that particular day when the crime went down that led to you going to jail, does it haunt you at all that a life was lost? Is that one of those things that overwhelms you?
All the time. It was very unnecessary. And not even intentional. It was a reaction. Every single day, like I told people, like it's nothing that I can say or do to, like, express, how regrettable I am of it, or even to, like, to the victim's loved ones. There's nothing I can say. And that's one of the reasons why I don't, like, talk about it that much, because I don't want to re-victimize them. I think about that as well.
You don't beat yourself up too bad, do you?
No.
Well, how do you handle it? How do you handle that, Willie?
In a weird way, he saved me. And I hate to say it. In a weird way, it saved
me. Let me hear you right. You say in a weird way, your victim saved you?
Yes.
Explain that for me, Willie.
Well, the only thing I can say is that I was on a destructive path myself, and the events that occurred in such a way that changed my life, but this is one of the reasons why I try to continue to do everything I do, because it's like, you took a life and your life is fair. So what do you want to do? And this is why I don't have any time to waste hanging out, partying and all that stuff. It's a continuous to try, not even make up, but to help other people in a way that I was never helped. This is how I look at it.
Man, thank you for being upfront and honest with that. I really appreciate that.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we've asked questions you didn't have to answer, and you still did it for us. So we really appreciate you just being real.
Yeah,
seriously. Luke, I'm going to throw back to you, bro. I know we were kind of like winding it up now towards the end of fast time. So back to you, Luke.
There's a couple people we haven't heard from at all this interview. Does anybody have one last question for Mr. Hamilton? Somebody we haven't heard from?
Can I ask something?
Sabi, of course.
Yeah, I'm just like waiting for the students. Hi, mister. It's nice to see you, and thank you for sharing this, your personal story. I just want to ask about regrets. You know, the people were like getting older and kind of thinking about the regrets. What's your biggest regrets in your life, and why? And like,
Let me say this. I try. I think like going through life, you can always have regrets about something you should have done that we wish that we could have done different. And I don't like for me, life is like a learning experience. Like you're gonna have a lot of bad and some good, and to wallow in regrets can make you stagnant. For me, right? So is it some things that I wish? And you know what? And I hate to say this. It's things I can't even say that I wish I could change things, because to change the past alters the future. You understand? So if I've changed something, how would my future look? You know, so I can only live in the present, right? So I will say that I've learned from my mistakes. That's what I'll live with. That I've learned from my mistakes, and I continue to do so. So regrets, I don't try to like dwell on that. I mean, I hope I answered your question.
Yep. Are you happy in life?
Am I happy? I'm content. Happy is like, oh, do I feel fortunate? Absolutely. Do I feel blessed? Absolutely. Happy? I'm okay. Let me say that. I'm okay.
What's your like favorite TV show or I don't know movie that you watched recently? Because
you might laugh if I tell you my favorite TV show. I like Star Trek Discovery.
Okay.
And The Walking Dead.
Oh, that's my favorite too.
And I've been trying to catch up on it, but I haven't had time to.
Yeah.
I'm looking at your T-shirt, Halal. That's you got some good food going on somewhere? I know about Halal.
A friend of mine's, some of the letters came off. A friend of mine, he has a clothing brand. He gave me this shirt. I just wear it around the house because it's old.
Pretty cool.
We're supposed to be a halal boy.
You said you're religious. Are you Muslim?
I'm Muslim, yes, I am.
Okay.
Luke, let's bring it back to your court, man. You want to bring it on down the home stretch?
Yeah, of course. So any last words of wisdom? You've shared so much, but any final, like, if you had to say one thing to somebody who was your age when you got incarcerated, what would you say to them?
What would I say to someone who was my age and got incarcerated at the age? I would tell him, you know, and I'll tell you that that my father was in a good role model. I've learned some things from him because of his living experience. And so when I first got incarcerated, and he was incarcerated at the time, when I got incarcerated, he was incarcerated. So I received a letter from him. And I still think of these words today, and it helped me like get through like some trying times. So he told me that he said, son, what did he say? He said, son, you're in prison now. So you can't worry about the world that you left because you're no longer a part of it. So he said, to consume yourself with what's going on in that world will ruin you. So only focus on that what's in front of you. Right? So, this is what I talk to people all the time about, you know, incarceration, because a lot of times we beat ourselves up about what's going on in the world that we left, that we have no control over. And that's what he did say about me not having any control over what's going on out there in the world. And I would tell that person who's incarcerated, his own child, that he has no control over what's going on in that world, that he should focus on what's in front of him and what does he want to do with the rest of his life. So this is something I would tell most of that other people.